From La Radio Ranch in the heart of Liberty, Texas, it's the Bombastic Blogcast for Thursday, October 17th, 2024. I'm the G-Man, Dan Gallo.
Hey, G-Man.
You hear yourself. Defender of the peace, keeper of the justice, purveyor of truth, the kid with the patriotic red, white, and blue eyes, and one heck of a nice guy. Let's get things officially started with
the Daily Datagram.
You betcha. Words of wisdom, words of inspiration, brain droppings, or naga nuggets. You get to make the call. And this is so true. Listen to this. It says, being listened to and heard is one of the greatest desires of the human heart. And exhibit A, social media.
For some reason or another, you sound a little taller on radio.
Let's move along now to the so-called educational part of this big blogcast.
Twisted History.
Let's do this.
Gather around, kids, because a lot of things happen on this day throughout history.
Oh, to be sure.
Some cool, some not so cool. Just the same. You need to know your Twisted History.
If you say so.
You might be quizzed.
Yeah, right. I assure you, that's not about to happen. All right, kids, it was on this day in 1931, Al Capone was convicted of income tax evasion. Yeah, it was the only way the feds could put him away. None of his trials for murder, racketeering, bootlegging, or anything else would result in a conviction, so the feds did the only thing they knew how. Threw the IRS at him. And it was on this day in 1965... the 64-65 New York World's Fair closed after 2 years and more than 51 million attendees. It's where the Ford Mustang saw its premiere during the first year of the fair, yeah. Possibly the only memorable thing to come out of that fair, too, for that matter, other than Flushing Meadows Corona Park, which is a nice place to spend a lazy Sunday afternoon. Assuming, of course, you have bodyguards.
What you need is a good bodyguard.
What I need is a good body. The one I've got isn't white guarding.
It appears that this nation of ours has some kind of a date with destiny. And that is to always be involved in some kind of a foreign war somewhere on the planet. And sometimes we will be involved in several locations around the planet. But we have another sign that we're getting ready to get involved in perhaps another long-term engagement. The Pentagon deployed the THAAD system to Israel. And in doing so, this marks an important step amid the volatile conditions over in the Middle East. And then again, you know, the Middle East, kind of a hopeless case. That seems to be a breed of humans over there that is destined to constantly be in conflict. And it has to do with their culture. They are a very unhappy people. They are born and raised unhappy. They die unhappy. And because of who they are, because of their strange culture, they draw everybody else on planet Earth into their conflicts. Now, the situation raises concerns about escalating tensions in that region because you got Pentagon Chief Lloyd Austin, who I don't much care for, but he is who we've got right now. And he's emphasizing our commitment to Israel's security. So at least he's got that right. And along with the missiles, U.S. troops now are being sent to the region. So here we go again. Now, the United States is deploying what is called the Terminal High Altitude Area Defense, or THAAD, T-H-A-A-D. System to Israel, accompanied by approximately 100 U.S. military personnel. That's kind of how we got started with Vietnam, you know, about 100 advisors or military personnel. And then it just escalated from that point on. Now, the system, this THAAD system, is a strategic maneuver to strengthen Israel's defense capabilities in the face of what are sure to be escalating Iranian threats and actions, particularly in the aftermath of Iran's missile attack. Again, that happened back on October 1st, and this decision, authorized by Lloyd Austin, demonstrates the United States' commitment to Israel's defense. We have to remain committed to Israel. We just do. Now, military analysts are suggesting that this move is not indicative of an imminent Israeli attack on Iran. but rather a precautionary measure against potential threats. At least that's how it looks on the surface. Now, this THAAD system, enhanced with 48 interceptors, surpasses Israel's existing missile defense capabilities, which are good, but apparently not good enough if what is anticipated to happen does indeed happen. And this requires a crew of 94 U.S. soldiers to operate this thing effectively. And this advanced defense system's deployment is, of course, in response to concerns over regional security and ongoing geopolitical tension. I think they're starting to take the threats that are coming out of Iran seriously. So this deployment, of course, has a geopolitical impact. It comes after a series of aggressive interactions, including that missile attack. That missile attack, by the way, officially, was from Iran-backed Hezbollah. And it resulted in casualties among Israeli soldiers and UN peacekeepers in Lebanon. So to avoid further escalation, Biden warned Israel not to launch preemptive strikes on Iran's nuclear facilities. In other words, Biden warned Israel not to do what they should do. But the Israeli leadership, fortunately, they have minds of their own, okay? And they previously ignored similar advisories. And they will probably ignore this one. Hence, the concerns about a larger conflict. Now, this strategic deployment highlights a significant U.S. aid program to Israel, which includes a large military budget, huge military budget. You know, here again, we got to print more money to do this stuff. So if you're looking for an end to inflation, ain't going to happen. And despite calls for a suspension of arms sales to Israel due to the ongoing Gaza conflict, the United States maintains our support of Israel, demonstrating a complex position within the region's political landscape. The Pentagon's stance, which emphasizes the protection of U.S. forces and Israeli interests, exacerbates Iran-Israel tensions. Now, you can forget for right now, well, they started it. They did. But now we've got this old Mad Magazine spy versus spy situation going on, where each side escalates a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more. And we all know what happens after that. So the THAAD system's installation coincides with these simmering tensions following last year's Israel-Hamas conflict, which is still a serious conflict. There have been no negotiations, no resolutions. This is still... It's still a burner on the stove of diplomatic relations, and the burner's on high. And these developments are sparking debate about the implications of continued military aid to Israel, with some warning that such actions could further destabilize the region. Well, yes, but what's at stake here? Now, Iranian leadership has issued warnings about the presence of U.S. troops, implying that any U.S. personnel in the area face increased risk. Well, I think we know that. And while the deployment aims to deter aggression, but more than that, protect allied interests, in other words, Israeli interests, Israeli people, the situation's still pretty delicate. And then you got your observers, including the United Nations, are raising concerns about the safety of peacekeeping forces amid hostile interactions. But I always have to scoff at that term, UN peacekeeping forces. They rarely do, because they really don't have the ability. So as the THAAD system improves defense structures, which is really important, and this is the entire point of deploying the system, to further Israel's defense structure. So as this system improves defense structures, the consequences of this positioning are going to emerge in the coming months, one way or another, influencing the region's security paradigm. such as it is. Believe it or not, a lot of our institutions of higher learning are shifting their priorities these days because of, the same reason we all are shifting our priorities. We can't afford certain luxuries. And in an important move reflecting these shifting priorities in higher education, the University of Nebraska-Lincoln, UNL, has announced the closure of its Office of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion, DEI, and the elimination of its Vice Chancellor for Diversity and Inclusion position. Now, that's a role that carried a substantial $320,000 annual salary, including benefits. Now, this decision, communicated by Chancellor Rodney Bennett, is part of a broader $12 million budget reduction aimed at addressing the university's financial challenges. Isn't it funny? Everybody is facing financial challenges. But they're facing a $12 million budget reduction up there at University of Nebraska-Lincoln, and it's aimed at addressing these financial challenges, including a $58 million budget shortfall expected by next year. Now, the DEI office, which was previously seen as central to promoting diversity and fostering an inclusive campus environment, which is all mumbo jumbo, it's snake oil, that's what it is. Well, this is going to see its functions decentralized. It's not going away completely, because you have to pander to that select few, that what, 1/100th of a percent of people who really give a damn about DEI. So Chancellor Bennett indicated that diversity initiatives are going to continue. Critics are arguing that this move undermines the university's commitment to equity and inclusion. Equity. Oh boy, here we go again. Equity. In other words, the same outcome for everybody, which is total bullcorn. It really flies in the face of human intelligence. If you look at it closely enough, that is what emerges. This DEI crap flies in the face of human intelligence, basic human intelligence. I'm not talking about rocket science. I'm not talking about Einstein kind of genius, just basic human intelligence. Now, the decision to shut down the DEI office and eliminate the high-profile vice chancellor role held by Marco Barker until December has naturally sparked controversy. The touchy-feely extreme lefties who are supporters of this kind of thing, DEI, which is divisive. It's absolutely divisive. But shutting it down really puts us back in the realm of reality. Now, supporters of the decision argue that the move is a necessary fiscal measure, given the financial strain on the situation, on the institution. Now, that may be so. Of course it's so. Nobody's arguing that point. But the one thing they fail to bring up is the most important aspect of this. What it does to people. It divides people. Now, opponents of this move, by the way, view it as a step backward in the fight for equality on campus, especially in light of ongoing national debates surrounding DEI initiatives in higher education. You know, if I had to send kids to college today, I wouldn't. I would just tell them, you want to go to college bad enough? Fine. You work your butt off and you work your way through college. I'm not paying for this bullcorn. Now, Chancellor Bennett's budget cuts are part of a 5-point plan to stabilize the university's finances. I mean, when you say they have financial challenges, that's really an understatement. And besides the DEI office, the plan includes reducing funding for student assistants, lecturers, and eliminating vacant faculty and staff positions. So, yeah, they're stamping out some burning dollar bills here. And these measures are seen as essential to maintaining the university status as a Carnegie R1 institution. Now, that's a designation that marks it as a leading research university. And research is very important to universities. Anytime they can get grants for research, wow, that's great. So this development at UNL is not occurring in isolation, but rather it's mirroring a broader trend across American universities, where DEI programs are increasingly under scrutiny, as they should be. In recent months, other institutions have also scaled back or eliminated similar initiatives amid political and financial pressures. And critics of DEI argue that these programs often prioritize ideology over academic merit, which they so often do, and can lead to divisiveness rather than unity on campus. Supporters, though, maintain that DEI initiatives are crucial for creating an equitable academic environment that supports all students, particularly those from marginalized communities. And see, that's right there is the contradiction. Supporters maintaining the DEI initiatives are crucial for creating an equitable academic environment that supports all. And then there's a comma right there. And then right after the comma, the line, particularly those from marginalized communities, when in fact DEI is aimed at these perceived marginalized communities and is largely anti-white. How many times have you heard about anti-white programs, seminars, classes, or just social get-togethers? Anti-white initiatives executed by DEI programs. So the elimination of the DEI office at UNL has drawn some responses from various stakeholders, including students, faculty, and the broader community, of course. While some applaud the university for making tough decisions to ensure fiscal responsibility, you got others who are concerned about the potential long-term impact on campus climate and student support services. Quite frankly, I think university chancellors or presidents all over the nation need to get into the habit of putting their foot down. When kids take to the campus, I don't know, the campus quadrangle, and start demonstrating for this touchy-feely BS, kick the kids off campus. Throw them out of school. It's time to discipline these students. Again, they are there to get an education. All this political activity on campuses, that's the reason we have become the nation we have become. We are only a mere shadow of the nation we once were. That's why I like people like Mike Rowe encouraging kids. He's not saying don't go to college. He's just saying learn a trade. So the debate over the future of DEI programs at UNL is likely to continue, especially as the university navigates the financial and social challenges ahead. Because when it comes to financial situations and social situations, financial always speaks so much louder. Slick Willie, a.k.a. Bill Clinton, has been out and about the country lecturing anybody who will listen. And he's advocating for increased immigration to address America's declining birth rates and ensuring economic stability. Now, this counters the issue at hand of an open border. Immigration's economic impact is multifaceted, and anybody who fails to understand that, I'm sorry, is going to be rudely awakened at some point in the future, and it won't be pleasant. Now, Clinton stands in contrast with his administration's past focus on fiscal discipline and job creation. As 42nd President of the United States, he recently advocated for increased immigration as a solution to the country's declining birth rates and potential labor shortages. Now, never mind the cultural impact it's going to have on the country. That doesn't mean a hoot in hell to him. And this position represents a departure from his administration's previous emphasis on domestic job creation and fiscal discipline. He's not the same guy that he was back when he was president. And, of course, all of this highlights the changing nature of the nation's economic challenges. Clinton's current stance more closely resembles recent Democratic immigration proposals. And Mark Zandi, who's chief economist at Moody's Analytics, believes that immigration policy could be a game changer for the U.S. economy. Because projections indicate that policies that increase legal immigration by 50%, because that's what they're proposing, 50%, could boost GDP growth by a quarter percentage point per year, adding $489 billion to the economy by 2026. This is what they promise. So while Clinton advocates for more immigration, the economic consequences are pretty complex and frequently, almost always are contentious. Now, according to research, immigration increases the nation's overall wealth, but has a negative impact on certain groups, particularly low-skilled American workers. You got a 10% increase in workers with specific skills, and that can reduce wages by at least 3% for that group with low-skilled American workers, including many African Americans and Hispanics bearing the brunt of these wage cuts. Something Donald Trump said: decades of record immigration have produced lower wages and higher unemployment for our citizens, especially for African American and Latino workers. And he was 100% right when he said it. I'm trying to remember this about Donald Trump. He didn't get to become the man he is by being an idiot. Proponents of increased immigration, including Clinton, argue that the long-term economic benefits outweigh the concerns. The net increase in wealth for the native population is estimated to be $50 billion per year, though this is partially offset by increased fiscal burdens due to higher government assistance and lower taxes paid by some immigrant groups. Because remember, the Democrat Party's in the habit of promising the moon, the sun, and the stars when they come over our border. And not only do they promise it, the Democrats usually deliver. And who pays for it? You and I do. Now, the economic impact of immigration is still a very hotly debated topic, and it will be for years to come, with valid arguments on both sides, okay? I do want to caution you to that. There are valid arguments on both sides. While increased immigration may help to alleviate labor shortages, you'll get your lawn mowed and your car washed, and it may boost overall economic growth, there are still concerns about wage stagnation and job displacement for certain segments of the American workforce. So as the nation grapples with these complex issues, you got your policymakers facing the challenge of balancing economic growth with the needs and concerns of American workers across all skill levels. Now, Douglas Holtz Eakin, who's president of the American Action Forum, he says, in the absence of immigration, we'll be like Japan, progressively older and smaller in population. So this isn't something that has an easy fix waiting in the wings. Oh, gee, it'll be real simple if we just do this or we just do that. It's not that simple. And the debate will continue. And as it does, it becomes clear that immigration policy is going to play a critical role in shaping America's economic future. Because the challenge here is to develop policies that can leverage immigration's potential benefits. Emphasis on the word potential. While also addressing legitimate concerns about its impact on wages and employment opportunities for American workers. As I said earlier, if I had to send kids to college today, I wouldn't. I would really encourage them to learn a good, solid trade, something you can put your hands on, something that is of real use to the American consumer. Real quickly, I wanted to point out something that Kamala Harris is up to right now that you should be aware of. She's launched a controversial proposal to offer $20,000 forgivable loans specifically to black men. Now, the plan, viewed by critics as nothing more than just a blatant form of vote buying, is part of her broader push to energize Democratic support among African Americans as she's campaigning for the big day here just weeks away. And Harris's announcement came amid growing discontent with the Democrat Party among minority voters. It's been very obvious. You would have to have been living under a rock not to be aware of the fact. It's a fact now that black men are not voting for Kamala Harris. In fact, black men, by and large, are very much behind Donald Trump because they have a good memory. They remember what happened during the Trump years and then what happened in the years immediately following the Trump administration. We're not talking about ancient history here. We're talking about something that happened 4, 5, 6, 7 years ago when Donald Trump was president and the economy was humming and all segments of the American labor force had jobs. We had the lowest unemployment of every single ethnic group in America under Donald Trump. And anybody who thinks that that can't happen again is deluding themselves. The Democrats are losing. And because they're losing, you've got these screwball plans now being proposed by the likes of Kamala Harris. I don't know if she originated the idea. I doubt it. She was probably given the idea and then told to go out and talk about it. But either way, it's a lose-lose situation for her. Let's head on over to the Comedy Corner and Lee Harden.
I love this job so much. I've not always had this job. I used to work as a substitute teacher. Oh, thanks. All I had to do was graduate high school, so thank you. That was bars Lou. It's a tough job. For me, it was tough because of roll call. There's so many names that are spelled weird, you're gonna say them wrong. Like, my first day, I'm in a classroom, I'm doing roll, I'm going down a list, I'm looking at names. I say the name Desiree, because that's what it looks like. I go, Desiree. And this girl corrects me. She's like, no, it's pronounced desire. Yeah, I'm not calling you that. For so many reasons, I'm not calling you that. So now I start overthinking, overpronouncing names. I'm looking down the list. I'm like, is there a Pate? Where's Pate? Where's Pate? And this kid's like, dude, it's Pete. Idiot. There's a name going around that I never had, but I hope to God it's a real name. LaDasha. The way LaDasha is spelled is L-A hyphen A. I didn't know we could do that. We could use symbols to spell names. I think that's kind of awesome. If I have kids, I'm gonna totally do the same thing. Like, yeah, these are my sons, hashtag. And poop emoji. Dude, it's fun, man. A lot of traveling with this job too, man. Gosh, and just when you travel, it's just easy to eat fast food, but I would eat fast food if I wasn't traveling, because fast food's the best food. Taco Bell is the best thing ever. Where's my Taco Bell? Yes! Love it. Thank you. Like, I love it. I just don't know what to do with it when people try to ruin it for you. Like, the healthy people, like, when you eat it in front of them, and they're always like, that's gross, man. Don't you know how they make that? And I'm like, no, but I wish. I would love to make this at home. Like, save more money. And I've got these friends. They know I, like, they make their own food. They're weird, man. They know I love the quesadilla at Taco Bell, and they're always like, Lee, we can make you a quesadilla that's better than Taco Bell. And I'm like, yeah, but can I come to your house at 2 a.m. and get it?
Make it a terrific Thursday. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you on tomorrow's bombastic blogcast. Remember, no such thing as spare change, free lunch, or too much horsepower. And you be sure to take some time today just to thank the good Lord that you're an American.
You mean that's it?
See you tomorrow, G-Man.